Hey guys, if you are a father who would like to have a deeper relationship with your son, if you have a son that you're trying to pour into and develop, if you want to help your son see the greatness that you know he has in his life, I've got a very special event coming up June 23rd through 27th. We are going to be in Cleveland National Forest. My father's coming with me, the man who you hear me talk about all the time, who helped me become who I've become in life. We're going to be doing a father-son rite of passage event, map and compass, land navigation. I'll be teaching you how to use map and compass in the exact same place that I learned in Navy SEAL training. This is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You'll have these memories for the rest of your life. If you want to find out more, you can click the link in the description below. We've only got 16 spots available, and we've already sold a few of those. You can find out more at theimpossible.life/legacynavigators. The crown of life, the Zoe crown. This is the full life. You got all of it, and that's what the impossible life is. So many people feel limited by what they can do in their life. They feel limited about, you know, I can't get to that level. I can't be this. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run my race, and I'm going to become everything that God's created me to be. I'm going to get to the end of my life and hear, well done, good and faithful servant. I'm going to receive the crown of life. Why? Because it starts in James chapter 1, verse 2. You know what I'm going to do? Any circumstance in my life that's difficult, I'm going to have a good attitude about it. That's where it starts.
That's impossible.
Let me tell you what I believe.
But your weakness is not your technique.
Yes! Yes!
Don't think you are. Know you are.
The Impossible Life Podcast.
I mean, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket.
An idea that is fully formed, fully understood, that sticks.
This is the Impossible Life Podcast, because Nick and I are attempting to live impossible lives. What we know is that nothing is impossible. So instead of using impossible as an excuse to not try, we'll use the pursuit of impossible as an accelerant for greatness. If something's never been done before, that just means it's unexplored. If they tell you it's too hard, it's just waiting to be simplified. Impossible is a default label used by uncourageous people unwilling to take a risk. The real truth is this. The solution to any impossible task starts with this question. If I had to, what would it take?
Welcome to another episode of the Impossible Life Podcast. I'm your co-host, Nick Surface, and I'm looking across at a man who doesn't take breaths. He holds them hostage. That's right, friends. The former Navy SEAL. Garrett Unkelbach, a man so aggressive, he doesn't exhale.
You can rejoin the atmosphere when I say so.
That's right. Little known fact, a man who never exhales. That'd be interesting, right? Some might say that you're puffed up. See what I did there?
Oh, that's a different direction.
Yeah, that was not the direction I went to go at all. That just popped in my head, and I figured, let's take a poke at Garrett, because it'd be fun.
Swing and a miss.
Maybe. Anyways, the topic of the day today, G, no witty rapport, banter, or stories about my failings this week. We're just going to go straight into the topic.
We're just skipping that section of the news report.
Just the usual beration. That happens off the air, so we're good with that. What we're talking about this week is 5 keys to endurance. It's not hard to get you to talk about endurance. It's one of your favorite subjects. You happen to have what I would say is quite a lot of expertise in it, having done a few things in the SEAL teams that required more than your average endurance, to put it lightly.
Yep, I've endured.
You have endured. But the reason I want to talk about this subject, and we're going to dive straight into it here. Dude, it's as the time we're recording, it's mid-May. When this comes out, it's going to still be
mid-May 2024.
Yeah, mid-May 2024.
You may be listening to this many years from now.
You are well and truly into the plans for your year, if you're that type of person. You're well and truly into the month, if you're that type of person. And if you're listening to this when it's released, it's a Monday, so you might be going, oh, I got a long week ahead. No matter what, like the shiny, happy, like it's New Year's, like everything can happen, perfect, like all that's worn off. Right now, a lot of people are just in the slog. They're like, they've exited the mountain. They're in the valley, firmly on their way. This is Frodo and Bilbo, like, heading towards the mountain. And, like, you have no idea. The Eye of Sauron is upon you, and you have no idea how long it's going to take you. And that's when a lot of people are like, dude, what am I doing? Like, and truthfully, you get tempted. And
it's in 2 Corinthians. It's in James. I believe it's also in Hebrews, where the writers say, you know, and go through this struggle for this short time.
Right.
Which means your life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In an eternal perspective, as I heard your dad say recently, like what we see now is so short compared to eternity, but we just don't know it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, let me give you a little bit of endurance. And I love Pastor Keith. I'm going to go ahead and gong him early. Pastor Keith, like, always talks about natural, supernatural correlations. And I just love that the more I feel like I get to know God, the more I see him talking everywhere. And like, endurance is not a sexy topic. It's not. Whenever you come to know Jesus, a lot of people will be moved by, you know, whatever may happen, a circumstance that causes them to repent. But like, no one goes up and says, hey, guess what? Like, you're committing the rest of your life. I shouldn't say no one. They should have an understanding. You're not making an emotional decision. You're truly making a decision to do everything in your life God's way, which means you're going to have to surrender your own ways, which is going to be incredibly difficult. Oh, and by the way, it's not going to work out the way you think it is. I can guarantee that up front. So guess what? Like, part of you becoming a son means that you get to learn discipline through suffering and obedience.
The same way Jesus did.
The same way Jesus did. That's not the message that we hear preached a lot, and that's not the message that a lot of people sign up for, but that is actually what God's... He disciplines the son he loves.
It's not, you know... repeat after me prayer, get a free bath and a t-shirt.
Right. No. And you don't get a bonus offer. Like, this is legitimately like you're signing up for, you're choosing your heart. The reason I talked about the natural supernatural correlation, what's the greatest endurance animal on the planet?
Man,
you're looking at him, right?
Like, I don't know about
that. Okay. You know, whatever.
Same species.
You can't help yourself at this point, can you? We are looking across at each other, which is why that's so insulting, in case you're not watching on YouTube. But anyways, yeah, mankind is the greatest endurance athlete. And the thing that's amazing...
If you're a runner at all, or just like even running adjacent, interested in athletics, I would encourage you to read the book Born to Run.
Yes, so good.
There's some funky stuff in that book, but also like if you start getting into running, like whenever you start doing your marathon training, because like living in America means you're going to run a marathon at some point.
Right.
Right. Whenever you start getting into your marathon training, just get the audiobook Born to Run. It'll certainly shift your mindset on running. And they do talk about some of those things about how man is the greatest runner and how man can outrun any animal over long enough distance.
And that was how they used to hunt before we had guns.
It's one of my bucket list items. I'd have to train very hard in running. But I want to run the race they mentioned in that book. You have to be like Boston Marathon qualifying.
Oh, you said the horse race?
But it's man versus horse.
Yeah.
Right? And over long enough distance, a man can beat a horse.
I would actually just like to run an animal down to the point where they fall from exhaustion. And then I just think that'd be an amazing experience for hunting. But anyways, the reason I was saying all this...
All the animal lovers are hating you right now for something.
You know what? I know from looking at the comments on our social media posts that animal lovers don't listen to us anyways, because we've had a few people recently talk about how they can't follow us because we believe in hunting animals.
Well,
yes,
sorry.
We do. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to go enjoy a steak, have fun eating soy. Anyways, but the longest run in history, Dean Karnazes, listen, he jogged 350 miles across California without stopping.
Did not stop.
For over 3 days.
All the things you're thinking of, eating... Using the bathroom. He didn't stop. For three days straight, he ran.
That's a disgusting finish.
And, you know, we run a long ways in Hell Week, but we do stop.
Yeah.
Right? You stop to use the bathroom. Well, very briefly. You literally get 30 seconds, and there's an instructor outside the porta potty yelling at you. And it's one of the biggest, scariest instructors. They always put like the big guys on there. And he's yelling like, you have 10 seconds or I'm going to rip you out of there. And in every single... Hell Week class the one that I was in and ones that I saw, you see students get ripped out of there. I don't care if your pants are down, right?
Yeah.
Your time is up. We'll rip you right out of there. So you get like 30 seconds. You get time to eat. It's a freak show that Dean ran for 3 days straight without stopping.
Now, the thing that's funny about that Bud story, that Hell Week story, so because Garrett has these reference experiences, sometimes when he's just like being froggy, which is literally all the time, he'll just be like, dude, you definitely would have got pulled out of a porta potty. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, but I'm not in Bud's, so I'm going to go ahead and enjoy myself. You know,
it is a useful skill to be able to, you know, take care of business quickly when needed.
Yeah, there's a whole other story here because, like I said, Garrett will reference these things as far as his standards when we're like hiking mountains and stuff.
Low needs, bro.
Right. I agree. I like low needs. I just think that you have a frame of reference that most people don't have. And because I'm around you all the time now, I'm getting to share in that frame of reference, for good and for bad. But the point being, back to Dean Karnazes. So 350 miles, you may be the kind of person with the thought of running like a 5K or 2 miles.
What's the longest you've ever run?
Yeah. What is the longest you've ever run? And like, what's the hardest thing you've ever done? And the reason I ask you that is because that's going to set a mental marker for you of what difficult actually is. Some people, they're like, oh my gosh, I had to run a mile. I was dying. It was the worst thing. Like if I talk to one of my kids, like me taking them running for a couple laps around our park is like, I got to sit down. I need to get water. That was so hard because they've not, you know, we're not doing ultra marathon training for my children.
That park, that's what, a third of a mile?
It's 0.42 of a mile.
Almost a half.
Okay. Yeah. But the point being, it's not a long distance, even with their little legs, you know, but for them, it's like that is setting the course. Well, that happens all the time. You've been, you know, we've talked about a few things on this podcast the past few weeks of my own misgivings, be it from whatever has been happening.
Join the Impossible Life Insiders. You can see what we're talking about.
Yeah. But the point being, the reason I bring that up is because I've had a more difficult experience. Like when something difficult happens, it's no longer like, oh my gosh, it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, been here before. And that's an important reference to have.
This is, I hadn't planned to mention this, but before I started Hell Week, mm-hmm. right? So Sunday night of Hell Week is, we've talked about this before, hardest part of pain is the anticipation of the pain. They put you in the classroom at like 2 p.m. on Sunday, and they plan to start Hell Week. Really, it's like whenever all the instructors show up and chug their energy drinks and check the machine guns and they're ready, which is going to be somewhere between 9 p.m. and midnight.
Right.
So they put you in there at 2 p.m. and you just sit there for a while. Well, before breakout, I've told some of his story before, and I won't go into the long story. But before breakout, he wasn't one of the main instructors. He was just coming to first phase, and he was literally just finished healing from a very traumatic event. He came and told his story to us, and we're about to start Hell Week, and this guy, this SEAL, comes in and tells us his story in combat. Jason Redman, if you read his book, he talks about some of this story. But this SEAL comes in and sits down and tells us this story of him getting shot multiple times, rescuing another guy that's shot multiple times. Mm-hmm. And I'm like going super fast through a very amazing story. He's on the helicopter, nearly bleeding out to death. And he's a medic, and he knows, he understands medicine. He understands his own body. And he's thinking to himself, it's like a 35 minute helicopter ride to the hospital. If I pass out on the on this helicopter ride, I'm not going to wake up. He's lost so much blood. If he loses consciousness, he knows he'll die. And he's saying to himself, if I stayed awake for 5 days in Hell Week, I can stay awake for another 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And literally went through his story. Again, read Jason Redman's book. He talks about some of it. Went through one of the most traumatic things, very difficult experience, and he used Hell Week as a reference experience.
Yeah.
And the crazier part of his story is that this guy, you can watch Bud's class 234, broke his left leg in SEAL training and finishes Hell Week with a broken leg. And then later in this same mission that he's referencing, gets shot from his knee up to his left shoulder. So arms hanging off behind him, his leg is broken, and he saves another man's life with a broken shattered leg and a ripped off arm.
Jeez.
Right. And so you think, again, reference experience, right? I did that. I can do this.
Right, man. Yeah, so whatever you're finding difficult right now, go ahead and think about just the story that Garrett just told.
Not just that. You can use other people's experiences as reference. Experience just like I did for Mount Everest. I'm like, man, the first people who climb Mount Everest, one of the hardest things at that point, and they didn't even know if they could do it.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to do something nobody's done before. Some people have done it, so it must be possible. You can use other people's reference experience, but also when you're going through difficult things, understand that you're building reference experience.
Yeah, big time.
And that was one, we'll come to this, but that was some of the way that I felt about SEAL training was I'm building, like one of the many values I saw is I'm building reference experience. If I can do this, whatever day later in my life I go on to do other things, well, anything that's not as hard as SEAL training, I can say, well, I can do that too.
Yeah.
But if I quit here, if I give up on this, I'm just going to keep dropping down pegs. And what if I quit on another thing?
Yeah.
Right, and so I knew I was building reference experience.
Yeah, that's so good. And there's so much value in that. So we're going to get into the five keys of endurance now, and then we're going to actually apply them to some key areas. We're going to apply them to your family, spouse, and kids, to business,
not just cardiovascular endurance, because It's neither Nick nor I's favorite topic.
Well, I think you hate it a lot more than I do. I'll just say that way. Like, I don't mind some distance running, but as we talked about recently, neither of us are rushing towards our next 100 mile.
Yeah, I like it because it's hard. That's why I like it. But there's some hards that I appreciate.
And for sure.
Running's not one of them.
Well, dude, for me, the ultra marathon, the hardest part was the training. Oh, it's giving up the time with the family. On the actual day, whatever, it's going to hurt. Like, okay. But it's the fact that you have to train for months and months and be like, okay, sweetie, I'm going out for 6 hours. I'll see you when I get back. And yeah, I'll be like wrecked. Part. Like, that's not
even the consistency of preparation, but like, see my family for an hour exactly. on Saturday.
Yeah, that's honestly the main reason why I'm not signing up for another one right now. You know what I mean? So I'd love to do is actually do the next one with my kids. They don't know that yet, and they don't necessarily listen to this podcast.
That's what I said and people said, are you going to do another one? I said, well, not right now, but I'm sure, my kids are going to want to do one. I'll be doing one with them.
For sure.
Let's get on.
All right. So there's five keys to endurance, and this is a super tactical episode, guys. We're just getting into it, okay? The number one key, the first one, is to have a strong why, right? You absolutely have to, the man who knows why can endure almost anyhow, right? That's Viktor Frankl, right? Quoting Nietzsche. And there's such a difference. What I would say for strong why, in a lot of cases, this is really, it's a vision. It's a sober-minded vision. What so many people do that gets them frustrated is they have a momentary desire, and they don't know how to tell the difference between sober-minded, like this is what I really want, and man, wouldn't this be great? Because most of the wouldn't this be greats are driven by the fact that they don't have something they think it'd be cool to get it, rather than to actually sit there and be like, man, what do I actually want?
I think that's one of the hardest questions for people.
Yeah, it is.
Is to know what they really want.
Right.
Because people are so driven by externals, right? You're driven by externals emotionally. You're driven by things like hunger. You're driven by things like lust and external desire, things that they tell you what to want. Mm-hmm. And what's really hard for people, like this is a question I ask people in a business coaching environment, also in a purpose context, is what would you do with your life if money was no object, right? If money didn't matter? Because for a lot of people, that's what's driving them. The pain of not having any money or going after the pleasure of what I get when I have money.
Yeah.
Right? They're using both of those things as sources of fuel. And like we talk about all the time, if you want to go the distance, if you want a lot of fuel, you can run from pain. Eventually, you'll outrun it. Right? You can run towards pleasure. The closer you get to pleasure, the less fuel you have to run towards it. Right? You start to experience some of it and you're less motivated. But the fuel that goes the longest is purpose fuel. Yeah. Right. And so, and again, in that context of, what would I do with my time? What would I do with my life if money didn't matter? That's a hard question for many people to answer. Mm-hmm. Right. And I hope a majority of the listeners listening to this podcast can answer that question. But many people struggle with that question. When you know what your why is, when you know what you're after, that's when you can endure simple momentary circumstances. That's when you can endure very difficult circumstances. This is one of the things I work with men that I coach on. This is one of the things that I think about. This is one of the things that has shifted me and propelled me, is learning how to pull the meaning, like connect your why, connect your purpose to what you're doing in a moment.
Big time. Yeah.
Right. For me, going through SEAL training, and if you're in Mindset Mastery with us, we just talked about some of this month, where the three pillars of discipline, right? That's grit and pain resistance, perspective, time frame orientation, knowledge, training, and experience, right? Three different pillars. A lot of people put me up on a pedestal of like, oh man, Navy SEAL, the David Goggins guy, right? Like you can just throw wrenches at him and shoot him with nails and it doesn't even feel it.
Is that not true?
I will neither confirm nor deny.
I knew it.
A lot of people put me up on this pedestal of like incredible pain resistance and grit. And I have grit, right? You've got to have grit to do some of the things that I've done. But it's not my strongest pillar.
Right.
My strongest pillar is perspective. What does perspective do? Perspective is the ability to look at things from a different way. Time frame orientation is the ability to look into the future, to zoom out, like we talk about on this podcast all the time. If you zoom in on pain,
It gets worse.
If you zoom out on pain, you'll see purpose, right? To look out from your pain and connect it to a moment. And so this is one of the things that I've done so many times in my life that's allowed me to keep going when it's hard, when Garrett didn't want to anymore. I said, this moment isn't about, for me, going through SEAL training is not about getting a trident. Going through SEAL training wasn't about like some personal glory in my life. I was able to look at SEAL training, even though I couldn't see where I'm at in my life today, I was able to look at SEAL training and say, my destiny revolves around this.
Yeah.
Me going through this trial isn't about growing to the next phase of my military career. me going through this trial is a part of this is the plan and the path that God has for my life. And so I can connect all of them. Think about what does your destiny mean to you? Mm-hmm. That's an insane mm-hmm. amount of value.
Yeah.
So I could look forward and bring that into this single moment. And that's what it would allow me to push through. So that's where knowing your why. And for me, a lot of that why was like, man, I want all of my life. I want to advance the kingdom. I want to be who God's created yeah. me to be. Right. And so more than like that, the pain of losing that has got to be bigger than the pain of a momentary yes, circumstance.
Very good, G. And that is it. That really is what drives you is when you, and the cost, the price for getting that type of vision is consideration. It's considered thinking of sober-minded time focused on it.
The simple way of putting it is Muhammad Ali's mm-hmm. suffer now, live the rest of your life a right. champion, right? And that's saying this suffering isn't as bad as the suffering
yes.
of walking away from your purpose.
And you're right. In the moment, that is what it comes down to. You're like, am I willing to give up? Like, am I willing to face the pain? In some cases, for me, if I quit at something, I have to face the pain of saying I'm not who I think I am. And that hurts a lot. And that's and way worse than anything I've gone through.
I watched many men walk through that.
Yeah.
Right? We've talked about that before. I won't jump yeah. into that one.
But I just wanted to highlight again, it's the consideration. We actually, years ago on a podcast, we talked about vision. And the questions we gave were, what do you want and why do you want them?
Yeah.
And I would challenge you. I mean, Joe Sweeney, New York Times bestseller that we had on our podcast, gave a great question. He said, imagine you're 90 years old and you're looking back on your life. Like, what do you want your life to have meant? These are not questions.
For as long as I've known Joe, he's been on the same track.
Yes.
Right? Focused on the same things. And there's a couple things in that list. But one of them is, this is such a cool thing about Joe, is like, so when I was leaving the military, he paid for me to go yeah. to the plantation, right? If you know what TaylorMade is, it's their factory. Paid for me to go to the plantation factory and get custom golf clubs fitted. And just because he knew that I liked to golf. One of my other friends, he bought like custom stationery for him. For one of my other friends, made like a key introduction to them. These are all guys in our program. And Joe's the type of guys, he looks at all of that as like, that's the meaning in my life mm. to do great things, to help other people. And he, for a lot of, like I wrote him one, a lot of these people end up writing like, you yeah. know, very sincere letters to him
yeah.
of thank you. This means so much to me. And I don't remember what the number is. I want to say it's 10,000.
Wow.
But that's, Joe has a target number of how many of those letters he's going to get in his life. I think it's 100,000 of how many of those letters he's going to get in his life that he's made a significant impact or had a significant moment with somebody.
That's incredible, man. And that's an example of a guy who's had a really sober-minded, this is what I want it to mean. The point I was making about that is after we did that vision podcast, I wrestled with those questions for a while, and I'll tell you where I eventually got the answer. It flowed out of me all at once. I wrote down 11 big wants I have for my life. It was on a flight. So what can we learn from that? What happens on a flight? I was on my own. I had no interruptions because I was on airplane mode. I chose not to put a movie on because I was flying with
some solid white noise.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I had nothing distracting me. And that's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. The price for this is consideration. That you really have to, that's the difference between having an actual vision and a must as opposed to like a momentary desire where you're like, yeah, that'd be cool. So
then what vision does, we talk about vision and mission a lot. We talk about vision and mission a lot in the context of the Purpose Blueprint. Those of you who went through the Purpose Driven Profit Accelerator with us got the opportunity to see some of, or well, not just to see some of it, but to, we got to write it with you. And that was such a great experience. And we'll be doing that again soon. But one of the things we talk about in the Purpose Blueprint between vision and mission. Mission is the really clear what, but on any what that you have in your life, anything that's difficult, eventually at some point you will come to a place. We've all experienced this. You can experience it in your marriage. You can experience it in your business. You can experience it in your personal life, in your health, in your fitness. There's so many ways you can experience this. You're doing something hard. Nick experienced this on our 100-mile run. You will come to a place where you say, why am I even doing this?
Yep.
What's the point of doing this, right? It's hard, right? A lot of people get there. As entrepreneurs, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You get to a place like, man, what's the point of even doing this? I could go make money easier doing X.
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't have an answer to that question, why am I even doing this? You will quit.
Right.
Vision is the answer.
Yeah.
Vision is, I believe in this greater future. This is what I see as possible. This is a thing that is worth enduring any amount of pain for. That's mm-hmm. what a vision is, an inspiring future. That is the why answer to those difficult, what painful questions.
And you're so right, G, because I honestly didn't put much thought into the 100-mile other than like, I just want to get this done because we failed last year. And so what was the reason? That's a poor reason.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about the reason we put strong why as the very first key If you're a logical person, what should you think? If I don't have a strong why, I'm probably not going to have endurance. So maybe there's some things you should say no to. Just a logical little conclusion there. Just
also examine some areas of your life. Like maybe, you know, why are you building the business that you're building?
Yes.
If the answer is, I thought I could make a lot of money doing this, you better strap up for when the tough times come, because you're probably going to quit.
100%.
Right? Or you need to reevaluate why you're really doing what you're doing.
Yeah. So key number two. Count the cost.
Count the cost.
This is the interesting thing about counting the cost, and we're going to give a scriptural reference here, and I'll let you go, G. But unfortunately, these things don't come with price tags. You're not at the grocery store.
This is a scripture reference.
Yeah, so it's Luke 14, 28 through 29, and it's Jesus talking, and he says, it's actually 28 through 30, sorry. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. Actually, I'm just going to keep going because we're going to go down to verse 33. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he's not able, he'll send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. That's a count the cost conversation.
And that's where people think like, oh, you got to count the cost of following God. Well, Jesus gives you the price there at the end.
Yeah.
Right? It requires, how much money do you have? That's the price. How much life do you have? That's the price.
Yeah.
And endurance, especially in a spiritual and an eternal context, that's the cost of following God.
Right.
That's expensive, right? It's also the most valuable thing that you can pursue, right? So it's worth giving all that you have. But when anything that you're enduring in, right, I would encourage you, more than just encourage you, like push you strong to connect everything in your life back to a kingdom perspective, right? If you're going to endure for something, let it always be an endurance for a kingdom reason, mm-hmm. for a kingdom perspective.
Yeah,
because there's nothing else in my life that I feel like I'm willing to pay whatever the cost.
Right.
Right. And so if you want to have a lot of endurance in something, I don't feel that way about it. There's other stuff that I'm like, you know, in business, there's prices that you're willing to pay. There's also prices that you're not willing to pay, mm-hmm. right? That's just a part of economics, right? There's a point to where this isn't worth it,
right?
Right. But when you can connect everything you do back to a kingdom perspective, that's where you'll keep going, mm-hmm. right? So to count it's kind of an oxymoron, the phrase of count the cost. You actually don't, if you're following God, you don't have to count it. You have to be willing
yeah.
to pay everything.
Right.
Right. With other things in your life, you do need to have an understanding of what the cost is.
Yeah.
The count the cost really, and that scripture just means, hey, the cost is all that you have. Mm-hmm. You don't have to count it, but you've got to be willing to push all your chips in. Endurance and other perspectives, you've got to understand, if I'm not willing to push in all my chips, right? It's easy to understand. If you're willing to give all that you have, you don't have to count them, right? But in other contexts of endurance, if you can say like, you know, maybe I wouldn't sacrifice everything that I have in my life to accomplish this, then there is a point at which you would quit.
Right.
And so that's something that you need to be aware of.
Right.
Right. What is the price that I'm willing to pay? And the way that you can endure the most is to do things like in a kingdom way, kingdom perspective, I'll pay whatever the price is.
Right.
And so as many things that you can align to that, you're going to develop a greater endurance.
For sure. And I think this is a step that people, I mean, really all these keys are things that are easy to breeze past, but I think people underestimate the cost of things all the time.
Yeah.
Because we have whatever we have in our mind about what we think it'll cost. And we're like, oh yeah, okay. And like, oh, I know it's going to be hard. And you hear that and you're just like, yeah, but, and you're fixated on what you want. And you have no idea. I have a friend who's a very successful entrepreneur, and he always tells people that are starting businesses, he goes, hey, twice as long and twice as much. That's what he says all the time, because he's like, whatever yep. you think it's going to take twice as long, and it's going to cost you twice as much. And I always remember those words, because sometimes when you're like, man, I thought we would be, you know, accomplishing X revenue or doing this by now.
I've posted 7 videos right. on Instagram.
Yeah.
I thought I would have 100,000
yeah,
followers.
What is going on? Yeah, you're obviously being facetious there, but like, sometimes you're like, man, I thought we would... And that's whenever you have to sit there and go like, oh, I misestimated the cost. Like, this is the cost that I actually signed up for. Like, what I thought I was signing up for was this.
There's so many people that have, you know, The average podcast is six podcasts.
Six podcasts. Yep, that's exactly right.
I've posted six podcasts and nobody's listened.
Dude, why don't I have 1,000?
I thought, you know, there'd be like 1,000 people who love my podcast by now.
I know, dude. Don't they know how much time I put in for those six episodes? As we're 140 in or whatever it is now, we're way above average. All right, G, should we move to key three?
Let's keep going.
All right, key three, not surprising, but it's a positive mental attitude. Be positive. Like the Joshua 1:9, G, what does that say? It's one of our favorite scriptures.
Joshua 1:9. This is God has spoken to Joshua, and now he's speaking to the Israelites. And he says, dude, this is not suggestion. This is command.
Yes.
God is saying, I command you to do nothing else except be strong and courageous. And at Mighty Men, that's why we yell Rock Zoc every Saturday morning, because this is one of those things that I know for every man you're going to struggle with. I've struggled with it, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to be afraid. It's easy to doubt. It's easy to pull back. And he's saying, do nothing else except be strong and courageous. If you'll do this, you'll see the promised land. There's a great land that I have for you.
Yes.
And you're going to have to go in and take it. And if you start being afraid, if you stop trusting me, if you won't follow me, you won't get there.
Yeah.
There's a promised land for all of us. And if you're afraid, you won't see it. Right. And so being afraid is that's having a negative attitude. You're focusing instead of focusing on what's possible, instead of focusing on who God is, instead of trusting and believing in God, you're focusing on the negative. You're focusing on lack. You're focusing on all the things that you don't have. You're not talking about how big your God is. You're talking about how big the giants are.
Yeah. And I mean, the second part of that verse, which you didn't say it, but you started to reference it. Think about it. He tells them, be strong, courageous, but do not be afraid. Okay. Yeah. We talk a lot about fear. Do not be discouraged. Oh, for the Lord your God is with you. This is like Eminem 8 Mile. You've been like, this is your moment, right? Mm-hmm. You got one shot, okay? Like they're about to go take the promise. No, I'm just saying that's because true. There's a lot to be built up. So what you say right before you go out onto the battlefield is important. And I just think it's very intentional that God tells them, don't be afraid or discouraged. Why? Fear will make you play the smallest, safest, weakest part of yourself, but discouragement is where it starts, right? Because the moment you get negative and discouraged because you start focusing on lack, and that's like you're starting to crack the door open to the tidal wave that's coming. Mm-hmm. And it starts with discouragement, because a lot of people are like, well, you know what, man, you don't, you know, you're not a Navy SEAL. Like Garrett went through Hell Week, dude. Like he's talking about great. Now you're starting, what's that doing to you? You're getting discouraged. So what's the logical thing? I should probably just give up because I don't have what he has. And people will let discouragement in all the time because they start to focus on what they don't have. They turn negative. They get discouraged. That's the first step to quitting is that you get discouraged. And you're never going to have endurance if you allow yourself to go down negativity. I say it all the time. I say it to my kids. No one has ever said, man, I'm so thankful that I was negative in that situation. It really helped me.
Positivity is a superpower.
Yeah.
How long have you known me now?
Almost 4 years.
Yeah, almost 4 years. I mean, and be honest, in the amount of time that you've known me, you've certainly seen me be mean to you, right? Yeah. But it's in a positive, corrective, instructional.
I know that deep down inside you believe that you're doing the best for me. But
have you ever seen me have a negative attitude?
No, honestly, I've not even seen you. I've never even seen you complain. The only time I've ever seen you actually get mad was when someone mishandled your weapon. And the only thing,
watched me chew my tongue off.
I did. Yeah, and that's only because I knew you. I know that nobody else around you realized how irritated you were by that, and also unsighted weapons.
Yeah.
So, honestly, we've been in some funny situations, and I've never seen you complain negative.
Honestly, those are the funniest situations, right? If you look at it that way. But the point that I made, it's not like, oh man, look how great Garrett is. The point that I'm making is it's how essential and how important positivity is.
Yeah.
Right. Pastor Keith, this is one of my favorite. He doesn't say this very often, but it's one of my favorites of his, as he says, attitude is the hinge that the door of your destiny swings on. Mm-hmm. And he said that a long time ago. That was when I was a kid when he said that. And I took that like, and he talked about it as like, you know, if you have a great attitude, that's grease in the hinge. The door of your destiny will swing wide open for you. If you have a bad attitude, that hinge is locked up. And as much as you try to open the door, you can't open it.
Yeah.
Right? Attitude is the hinge that the door of your destiny swings on. And what I've found by being positive is that doors just open for me. Things mm-hmm. just work out. People want to be around me. People want to learn from me. Being positive, and Zig Ziglar says, your attitude determines your altitude.
Yeah.
We talk about it like in the context of an airplane. The attitude of an airplane is the direction of the nose. If the nose is pointed down, that's a negative attitude. If the nose is pointed up, that's a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. What kind of airplane do you want to be in? You want to be an airplane that's pointed at the ground? I sure don't. I want to be in an airplane that the nose is up, that the attitude is up. That's what I want the rest of my life to look like.
Yeah.
Right? When you get knocked down, when you go through difficult things, are you someone who hangs your head? Are you someone who picks your head up? That's literally what attitude is. And we've talked about attitude this way, both on the podcast and in Mindset Mastery, that when you look at some of the etymology of attitude, this is like one of my favorite things about attitude. When you look at the etymology of attitude, one of the original definitions is around the posture of something. Mm. So think about a sculpture,
yeah.
Right? When you look at a sculpture, when you look at the sculpture of David, there is an attitude of the scripture, the posture, the way that his body language comes across. When you paint a picture of someone, right, there is an attitude that's captured in the painting. And so think about your life. If you were going to get sculpted, if you were going to get painted into a painting, what would the attitude? You don't get a range. There's not a range of attitudes in a sculpture. There's not a range of attitudes in a painting. Your entire life is going to get summed up into a sculpture or a painting. And what would the attitude be? A lot of people, their attitude would be negative. A lot of people, they'd be looking at the ground. Is that the type of person that you want to be? I want to have an attitude like the sculpture of David. It's a combination of courageous, of understanding, of submitted to God, of humble. So much is captured in his attitude and that statue. And that's what I want to be, right? So if at any point, my dad used to say to me when I was a kid, when I was having a bad attitude as a kid, or really just feeling sorry for myself or things like that, or even as I got a little bit older, times that I might, like, I had things hurt and I cried. And he said, you know, I wish I had we live in a different time now.
Yeah.
He said, I wish I had a video camera so you could see yourself right now. And he wasn't saying that like to beat me up or negatively. He was reminding me of, you wouldn't like, if I showed it to you the way you're looking right now, you wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
Right. He knew in me who I wanted to be. And he's saying, what you look like right now isn't who you want to be.
Yeah.
Right. And so have that way of thinking about yourself. At any point, the way you're coming across, is this really who you want to be? Is this the attitude that you want to have? And if you'll have a positive attitude, that's what you'll endure through any circumstance. The guys in my Hell Week class who couldn't laugh when it was horrible, who couldn't laugh when we were being destroyed. I've told the story before. I made my little peanut butter and jelly MRE. This was like my one tiny little joy, and a giant wave comes in and just takes it off of my lap. And I just looked at the guy next to me and laughed. Right, because that's all you can do in those circumstances. If you get negative, if you read Unbroken, Louis Zamperini's book, there's a lot, and also Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. Both of them, even more so in Viktor Frankl's book, he talks about where he could see that someone was about to die.
Yeah.
Right, and that's because of the attitude that they started having. Right, it doesn't matter. They didn't really care about things anymore. They were negative. They complained a bunch. Those people died. It's the most austere circumstances for a human being to endure. And Viktor Frankl made it through endured in those situations because of his attitude.
Yeah, and you may be looking for the 3-step process to change it. You just have to make a decision. This is just you exercising your choice muscle, because the truth of the matter is like, all change starts with awareness. Well, you just listened to that, so you're aware now.
I want to give one more scripture. I know we're going long on PMA here, but I love this one. This is probably one of the, I wouldn't say favorite scriptures. I have a lot of favorite scriptures, but this is definitely top 5 of scriptures that I quote the most.
Okay.
James chapter 1, verse 2.
I actually knew you were going to say that.
Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance, or endurance. It's the different word, different translations. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you, I'll stop there, not lacking anything. If you want to be mature, if you want to be the greatest version of yourself, if you want to get to where God's created you to go to, it starts with how you feel about difficult circumstances. Verse 2, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. The word consider it is the Greek word hegemai, which means to lead one's thinking. You have to choose your thoughts in a circumstance, right? If it doesn't mean, it's not saying, hey, difficult circumstance is joy, right? Like you're just trying to beat it into your head. No, it says consider it. See, when you go through these difficult circumstances, consider it joy. Choose to see it this way. Because when you face trials and you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance or endurance, let that endurance finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Mm. That's the value of struggle when you look at struggle with the right attitude, when you look at it in the right way. And fast forward just a little bit to James chapter 1, verse 12. This is, if you don't know this, maybe if I love all of you, just shout out to all of you really quick who listen to this podcast and you listen to like five episodes and you're like, I like this show. I'm going to go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Cool. I love you guys for doing that. All of you who've done that. So shout out to you. You're awesome. If you go back and listen to the beginning, you'll understand why some of the understanding of why this podcast is named what it is.
Yeah.
And it's James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is the one who perseveres or endures under trial, having stood the test. That person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. The crown of life, the Zoe crown. This is the full life. You got all of it. And that's what the impossible life is.
Yes.
So many people feel limited by what they can do in their life. They feel limited about, you know, I can't get to that level. I can't be this. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run my race and I'm going to become everything that God's created me to be. I'm going to get to the end of my life and hear, well done,
yes,
good and faithful servant. I'm going to receive the crown of life. Why? Because it starts in James chapter 1, verse 2. You know what I'm going to do? Any circumstance in my life that's difficult, I'm going to have a good attitude about it. That's where it starts.
Yeah, and by little bonus nugget for you, since Garrett was talking about the inception of what we did, you look at our logo, which I'm looking behind Garrett at it right now. The trident that we have is very purposely designed. If you look at it differently, the little dash and the dot below it.
We were intentional? What?
Yeah, no kidding. We actually had this planned out from the beginning. Dash and dot is actually supposed to be a man with a gigantic crown on his head. So that'll make you look at the trident logo that we have on our hats and on everything we do a little bit different. So go ahead and have a look at that if you want. Okay, so we're going to get to the fourth key, but key number one was to have a strong why. Key number two was to count the cost. Key number three was positive mental attitude. Key number four, G, and this one is...
We used to joke really quick before we go to number four. One of the things, like, guys who, you know, there were guys in the military.
Oh, I know you're gone.
There were guys in the military who, like, were more naturally positive than others, and there were some guys who were negative. And on different trips, guys would write different gear lists, right? Like, if I'm running a trip, I can write the gear list. If I design this trip, I'm going to, you know, because I'm the one who knows what's going on. So I'm going to tell everybody what to bring.
Right.
And there were some guys who were like the overly positive guys that would write on the gear list PMA. Just to piss off the guys who hated the positive people.
Well, that sounds fun. But I'm glad they packed that. So key number four is not PMA. It's no time limit. And you might be going, wait, what do you mean no time limit? So I'm going to tell you.
This is a fun one.
This is a fun one because we talk about the whatever it takes mentality, and I'm going to share a quick story with you guys because this is what I call 67th mile syndrome, and that probably won't mean anything to any of you guys, but I talked to enough people who have run ultra marathons and read online that I realized that something 67th mile, for whatever reason, is when it really sucks bad, and it's when a lot of people quit. It's actually the point at which we stopped in our first one.
What was 82nd mile syndrome?
Okay.
That's a different syndrome.
I'm trying to make a point, man. You honestly, I feel like you're losing some of your self-control now because you can't resist taking shots at me. It's like you have a tick, like an OCD now. That's a whole other story. But 67th mile syndrome is this. And this is where, this is catch this for a lot of you out there. Whatever it takes mentality, which is an endurance mentality, doesn't have a time limit. Mm-hmm. It's not whatever it takes for 3 months because that's not endurance. It's whatever it takes.
So it's really that it's unconditional.
Exactly.
I'll you know, really work hard at helping my wife and, you know, being the man that she wants to be for a year.
Right.
But
and we'll see. And if she gets better, then I'll keep going.
Yeah, but if she doesn't, you know, I'm out of here.
Right. And that's a lot of people's thinking. Well, this is what 67th mile syndrome does. It's, man, I'm getting my butt whooped. I'm really tired at this point. I'm moving so slow and I'm all jacked up. And I've got 33 more miles, which might sound like a lot all the time, and especially whenever you've just run 67. Oh, I got 33 to go to 100. I just ran 3 miles an hour. So if I got to do 33 more, I'm going to be out here for 11 more hours.
That's some sad math.
And I'm actually going to... What are you talking about?
I'm just saying that's really sad math.
Okay, I'm used to you like saying
I didn't math say bad wrong. Math. Right. I said sad math.
Yeah, but that is what you're doing. You're going, dude, 11 hours and actually... Like, I may not even move that fast. What if it's even long? And, like, so you're starting to give yourself.
That's what a lot of people do.
100%. I mean,
literally, you start counting the cost in the worst and the saddest way.
Exactly.
Like, man, I don't know if I really want to do this anymore. I thought it would be easier than this.
Well, logic kicks in. You go, well, they've got a 30-hour cutoff, and I'm, like, 21 hours in, so I'm actually not going to be able to make it anyways. I might as well just stop now. And what you don't realize is that you would know if you thought about it, you're not the same person at 67 that you are at mile two. Everybody gets that. Like, you've gotten beat up.
I can't say I was one of these people, but I've watched multiple people in our 100-mile race that, like, mile 75 be like, oh boy, skippy me, and just take off running. And even you at mile 82, after you didn't want to keep going anymore, you got up and I was just barely moving, and you started passing me. You lapped me a couple times.
I did. I had to catch up. Yeah. But and that was a supernatural, like, truthfully, that was an amazing moment. But the point I'm making about 67th mile syndrome is that you don't know who you're going to be. In this analogy, you don't know how you're going to feel at mile 82.
You're limiting what God can do with you. And that's why, so that
you're thinking straight line depreciation.
Exactly. The key here to endurance is no time limit. And why is it? I said it's like being unconditional.
Right.
The key here is about time. Why? Because it's the one thing that no man can change.
Right.
Right. God has put this beyond man's control. Most powerful people in the world, they can do a lot of things. They cannot create time. They cannot manipulate time.
Yep.
It's the one test that all of us have. What will you do with your entire life? We all get a fixed amount of time. Time flows for all of us the same, right? You can feel it different, perceive it different, but everyone's clock ticks at the same speed. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is where we get tested. God moves in and out of time. Time is different to him. But to us, right, like think about all the things that God has made flexible versus the ones that he's made inflexible. And God has made time inflexible. He said, this is where I'll test you, right? This is the component that every man will have that's the same. And if you can understand this, learn how to have, instead of man's timing, have God's timing. This is what I call spiritual patience, where you can see what Nick's talking about, where it's the analogy of the run. You know what? You might be a different person at mile 75. You might just pick up and take off running.
Second wind.
God might test you for 13 years like he did with Joseph, and then in a moment say, you know what? Now I'm going to make you the most powerful person, second most powerful person in the entire world. You'll lead everybody. God did all of the work, and Joseph just trained, endured for 13 years, and then the entire fruit happened in an instant, right? And so if Joseph had been like, man, like for 13 years I've been doing this, and God's just not moving, I think I'm going to quit. No, he endured. He had no time limit. For 13 years from the time that he was a little boy, he said, you know what? I have a dream.
Yeah.
I have a dream. I believe that my brothers are going to bow down to me, right? And that can seem like such a prideful or arrogant or even insignificant thing. We don't know what else was in Joseph's heart, but that's all that the scriptures give us, and we know that he was excellent because of it. He held on to the dream that he had. He never stopped believing, right? And he put no time limit on that amount of dream. And so that's the point that I wanted to make there, is that this is the area that God tests us in, and that's what faithfulness is.
So good.
It's Hebrews chapter 10. It's in Romans, multiple scriptures, that when you hold fast your faith firm until the end, right? Meaning that hold the assurance, right? God's going to give you peace. God's going to give you an understanding of what it is that you're supposed to believe. And then the test is, can you hold it till the end of the race?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy when God gives it to you in a moment. We're all going to have those burning bush moments where you feel like God's really speaking to us. But what will you do between now and the end of your life?
Yeah, that's so good, man. I think about that Joseph analogy. It would be like working out and eating healthy for 13 years and seeing no results. And then you go to bed one
never
night.
Changed.
Yeah, and you wake up and you're jacked.
Look like C-bum.
Yeah, like, no, and obviously that's where, I think about how many people would be like, working out doesn't work for me. And understandably so, I would probably be like, yeah, you're doing something wrong. But that's literally what he did. It's like, kept doing all the right things and all the wrong things kept happening to him. It's fascinating. Okay, so let's get to point five, because I do want to apply these to family, business, and health. And we got into the points. As you can tell, we're slightly passionate about endurance. Point five is strategic planning.
Strategery.
And you may think like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Well, a lot of things, I think people fall down. They may have a lot of these other things, and they don't put intelligent design in place. Mm-hmm. And so they run into walls that, if they had planned, they would have seen those coming and taken a whole different course.
We talk about with habits, right? And people want habits that are going to last.
Yeah.
We talk about with habits, there's three components to habit. There's the desire, there's the discipline, and then there's the design. And a lot of people fall down in the design category.
Yeah. And the strategic planning comes in a number of different forms. But I think one of the questions I always ask is like, what can you do forever rather than what can you do once? And in health, these are the people that are like, I'm going to the gym for 3 hours a day. No, you're not. You got a wife, you got kids, you got a job, like you got other things. You're not going for 3 hours a day.
I did that when I was 20.
Right. If you're 20, go for 3 hours. And you know what? You should.
For the most of the time I was in the military, I worked out for 3 hours a day. It was 90 minutes to 2 hours in the morning, another 90 minutes to 2 hours in the evening. And I had fruit of that. It was great. But that doesn't support, I can't do that in these other seasons in my life.
Same. When I was in my early 20s, I would do two a days, and I was not built the way you were, but I was lightning fast. I was in way different shape. I was absolutely ripped because I didn't have anything else to do. And to your point, I had that time. That's not sustainable now. So now it's, well, what can you do forever? Okay. Because guess what? You're going to get a lot more results from that. That works in every area of your life. We're going to get into this with family, so I'm not going to jump ahead. But so, I apply that thinking towards all the things I want in my life is what are the little opportunities that I can sow every day?
And that's some of the way that I view strength, mm-hmm. right, is similar to what we're talking about with strategic planning here. It's really looking at it from a whole of saying, what can I always do? My view of strength isn't what can I, you know, what's like the most common dude question.
How much you bench?
Yeah, how much you bench, right? And that's literally like, how much weight can you put on the bar and move it 24 inches one time? That's not really to me what strength is. I look at strength instead of not what can I pick up one time, but what can I carry and never put down,
good.
Right? To me, I look at strength as I'm never going to put down the weight of being a father. I'm never going to put down the weight of being a husband. I'm never going to put down the weight of being a leader in all these different areas of my life. These weights just get added to me and they make me stronger. God's given me these weights. So instead of saying like, man, what burst could I, you know, do really quickly? What can I do and just keep on doing forever and get stronger at it? Because when you put on that weight of being a father, that weight of being a husband, and you view it that way, like, man, this is making me stronger. If you put on a 20-pound weight vest and you just never took it off, after about 6 months, which seems like a long time, but after about 6 months, you'd hardly notice it was there.
And it would smell.
It would stink for sure. You should probably bathe with it.
Yeah.
Give it a good scrub as well as all of your other areas. But if you wore it for 6 months, it'd be easy to put on just another 5 pounds of that weight vest. Yeah. Like, oh, man, now I feel some weight. You wouldn't feel the weight that you felt at the beginning.
Yeah, so good. I'm disappointed because whenever you said, what's the question that guys ask each other, I didn't use my sound effects to be like,
how much you bench?
You know, or like, it should have been monster voice.
How much you bench?
Like, because that's, okay. Anyway, sorry, got a little left field. All right, let's apply these to family. But real quick before we do, if you're sat out there and you're listening, ask yourself the question, what's your default time frame orientation? Like for anything, I would say start with health. How long would it take you to get in good shape?
Go listen to, if you've never listened to it, right? If you are someone who listens to this podcast, and you're like, man, I like The Impossible Life. I'm a listener, if you consider yourself an audience member, and you haven't listened to the time frame orientation episode.
Big Norm recognized that it was a game changer, and Norm knows what he's talking about. But the reason I asked that question is because when I first was like, oh, I'm going to get in shape, I was like, dude, I should be able to do this in 3 months. Now, why did I have that? Like, and that's the question. Where did you get that from? Well, I didn't realize it at the time, but I thought about times whenever I'd really transformed my body in the past, and it was like 21. And you know what? It probably took me longer than 3 months, but because I had like no concept of time because I had no commitments, it felt like 3 months. It was probably more like 6 months or a year that I actually really made a big impact. But you look at these guys like The Rock or anybody that you like, they've put decades into it. And so like most of our time frame orientation is off. And that's just for health. There's a lot of different things that we could go into, and we don't even realize it. But let's go into this first, okay, G? So the five keys to endurance were strong why, count the cost, positive mental attitude, no time limit, and strategic planning. Let's apply this to like your family, your spouse, and your kids, right? And I would say that for the strong why, we talked about this, about having vision. Like I sat there on that flight, and I will tell you that I have a strong, strong vision for all three of those things. And they're separate wants. And I'll share them real quick just because I feel like it'll help people. My vision, my want for my family is to change my trajectory of my family name.
Right.
Because the history of my family, if you look back, you don't have to go far. It's broke. It's depression. It's suicide. It's divorce. It's alcoholism. It's smoking. Like, you name it. It's not, the surface name is not covered in glory. And I'm like, I'm going to change this.
Yep.
And so I have a huge strong why. And I've written very detailed notes in my phone that I read regularly. For me and my spouse, I know that we want to have a loving connection for our entire life because I want our marriage to be an example, first and foremost, for our kids. Right. And I want to have that intimacy and connection.
And from the count the cost perspective, you're able to connect this to, hey, this isn't just what I want.
Exactly.
Right. This is about, it's not just about what is my name.
Right.
It's about developing a name, which means developing a family.
Yes.
Creating a lineage where children will, the greatest legacy that you can give your children is not money. It's a way of thinking.
Yeah.
Money empowers a way of thinking after you give the way of thinking. So what you're saying is, you know what? The most important thing that I can do is raise up this way of thinking that I'm developing and that I'm transforming. And if I can give my children this, this will advance the kingdom much greater than what I could have done on my own.
Yeah.
And that's where you can connect it. Like I said, when you count the cost and the way Jesus was talking about, it's like, hey, look, I'm willing to give everything. Well, you are willing to give everything to be who God's called you to be. And so you can connect and say, you know what, I can have so much endurance in this because this moment isn't just about like, well, I want to have a good name so people like me and respect me. I want to have a good name so generation after generation and 10 generations from now, I've laid a lineage and I've developed my children that'll develop their children that for 10 generations will advance the kingdom of God.
Yeah, and that's a great point, G. Underpinning everything, like my whole life, literally everything in my life is to advance the kingdom of God. Like that is the driving force and vision and motivation for everything that I do. I could go into all sorts of detail, but I'm not going to because I don't think it would serve the listeners. And then for my kids, I have a very clear vision. So when I have that, first and foremost, like my why is massively long-term. I'm not thinking about what I want for my kids in the next 3 years. I'm thinking about what I want for my kids when I'm on my deathbed, like what we want our lives to have meant. And then it's like, okay, count the cost. Okay, well, now I have to think about these things. And this is where these things start to blend together with positive mental attitude, no time limit, strategic planning. You know, I had this thought literally just today. I looked at a picture of my son on one of our digital photo frames, and I just realized, like, my kids are different ages. They're 4, 9, and 11. And I've got great relationships with all my kids, and I'm very grateful for that. But I just realized, like, right now, like, my 4-year-old, I'm the coolest person in the world to him. He wants to be with me almost to the point where you're like, dude, I need a little bit of a break because he just loves me so much. And here's where the count the cost, the no time limit, and the strategic planning. I have to know as the adult, this is a springtime with him. He's not going to always want to be in that. And like in
short
summer,
season.
Right. So I need to make the most of this because if I'm the guy who's always like, hey, sorry, dude, can't do it. Like, okay, yes, I have to work. And so I do have to tell him, buddy, we can't do it right now, but I will go jump on the trampoline with you after work or whatever it is. This is the type of thing that's like, what's the cost? I'm going to be exhausted, right? Like I'm not going to feel like it, but I don't want to let that moment pass because I'm sowing a seed of later on down the line, whenever there's other things pulling for his attention and there's a battle for his heart and truly a battle for the relationship that we have. Have I sowed good seed that I can then reap? Or am I sowing into like giving him distractions and giving him things to go off and do other than hanging out with me so that that becomes the norm in our relationship? And that's what you're talking about when you have that strong why. It's not about him saying, hey, do you want to go do that? And I'm tired. It's about what seed am I sowing so that when he grows up, he goes, you know what? My dad and I had a great relationship. He took time with me. We had fun. He's not going to remember all the times individually. He's going to have one thought, one sentence. My dad made time for me. Yep. Or he's going to say, my dad was always too busy. It's that Cats in the Cradle song.
Absolutely. And very
so,
good.
So it hits you so hard. And it's like that with everything. So with my wife. My wife was telling me some areas where I needed to get better the other night. And you know what?
Let's go, Rian.
No, because she was right. It's been an incredibly busy season. And you know, I just sat there, check, listen. So you have to, and that's when you're sitting there and you're like, man, it doesn't feel good. But you know what? I'm going to listen. I'm going to get better. I'm going to take massive action on it. Why? Because it's not about this moment of like, hey, you know what? It's been busy. I really just need to. No, I'm trying to build a great relationship that has a strong why. So what do I need to do? There's no time limit to that. I have to stay positive while I'm being corrected and listen to it. And then I have to start putting things in place. So guess what I've done? I put things in place to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So that's what I mean about the strategic planning. It's little things. And it's, you know, it's the same thing touched on it with your kids. You may have a job that takes you out of your house for 10 hours, but can you sit there with them at breakfast? Can you sit there? Like, what family moments can you do? Like, strategic, do you have family meetings? I know that's something that you grew up with. There's so many things that you have to look at that you put in place so that it's not just on a whim. But those are just a few things on family, spouse, and kids, G.
Well, you laid it down there. Let's go on to business.
All right, G. Why don't you go ahead and take us through business then?
You know, just in the last week, I've had the privilege of speaking and working with a CEO of a large business here in this area, and had a call talking with, you know, preparing for some later work with a top executive in a Fortune 100 company. And in both of those companies, and they're both large in different perspectives, right? But in both of those companies, we end up talking about the same thing. We start coming back to the why.
Yeah.
Right? What is the why? It's having a vision. What does a vision do? It tells a story. A vision prepares you for answering one of the most difficult questions in business. I referenced this earlier, right? In any business that you're in, you'll come to a place and you'll say, why are we even doing this?
Yeah.
Business owners will feel that way. Team members will feel that way. Employees will feel that way. All the way down to the bottom. When you get pushed, when you get taxed beyond your value system, right? And for a lot of people in a business, their value system is work for money. And when you get taxed beyond your value system, that's when you start saying, what's the point of doing this? I could make more money 100%. Easier doing something else. When your value system is not just based on money, when your value system is based upon kind of like what we've been talking about, I believe in a greater future. I believe in something. I think the world would be greater if it looked like this. I think my business could solve this problem. When you start to talk about a greater picture of the future and you have this enduring why, that's when you get faced with that difficult question of why are we even doing this? You have an answer to it. And if you want a business to endure, right? All we're talking about today is endurance and the value of endurance. Just like James chapter 1 says, if you get this right, you'll be perfect and mature and you don't need nothing else, right? When a business can learn to endure, that's not grit.
Right.
A lot of people think like, man, I'm just going to grit it out.
Right.
I'm going to grind it out in my business. That ain't it.
Right.
Right. Endurance comes from, and one of the keys to endurance is why it was number one, start with why. Why does your business exist that's not about making money?
Yeah.
When you can answer that question, that's when you're able to answer the questions further down the road of why am I even doing this? Why am I working here? You can answer that question when you can answer the question of why. What's the point of my business that's not about money?
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, that's why we do the Purpose-Driven Profit Accelerator for businesses, is to develop that whole...
So many people, they start a business with good intentions and they have a bit of a good why, but 32 quarters later, they're not doing it for that reason.
Yeah.
They're focused on all kinds of different things. And then they start asking the question, man, why am I even doing this?
Yeah. And that's why the stat exists that we covered with Cody a few weeks ago. 66% of businesses never make it past 10 years. You got to know going into it. Two out of three of you, you're not going to be here in a decade.
It's not because, the economy wipes them out.
Right.
It's because the economy makes it hard and people quit when it's hard.
Yeah.
And you quit when it's hard because you don't know why.
Yeah. And one of my favorite stories is when we were early on in this podcast and it was during COVID and I came over and you were like fired up and you're like, man, if COVID keeps going, I'm going to make $100 million. And I was like, what? You're like, because all these people have just been waiting for an excuse to quit and I will never quit. I will keep going. And I remember when you said that, I still remember it very clearly because I was like, I love every letter of what you just said because that, like when I talk to people and say that your thinking is your greatest advantage, that right there is like an actual hands-on of it being your greatest advantage.
I can say in one of my businesses, in our construction company, last year is a difficult year for construction. This year, we already know, is going to be the best year we've ever had. And based upon what the work that we've got lined up, 2024 will be our best year. 2025 is going to be the best year we've ever had after that. And 2023 was the most difficult year we've ever had.
It's funny how that works.
You got to go through those difficult times to get to the good times.
So good, G. Yeah, and that you just demonstrated positivity, counting the cost, no time limit. And are you using strategic planning? Of course you are. I mean, we're big fans. If you know what EOS is, we're big fans of EOS, The Impossible Life. We actually use it for this business. If you don't know what that is, just look it up. if you want a great implementer, we can recommend a few. But we won't go down that road on this one. So last one, health, right? We've talked about this one on a few things. If yours is just to get jacked, at some point you'll stop wanting to be jacked and because the cookies will be better or you'll get busy with work.
If it's just jacked for the sake of vanity,
right.
Vanity is empty.
Right.
And emptiness, the lie of emptiness is just go further down the road and you'll get there.
Oh yeah.
And people keep going further down that rabbit hole until they chase vanity so long. Vanity sold health to them, but you keep going and it's not satisfying. And this vanity road leads you to a place of like detrimental to your health.
Yeah.
Right. If it is just about vanity and the way that you look. And I'm not saying that that's what the majority of people do, but that's an illustration of doing things for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And so how I've tied my why for health to a kingdom purpose, which is, like I said, my reason for existing and my purpose fuel, is I just realized I can't say I want to be my best for God, for myself, for my family, for everybody that I get the privilege of interacting and influencing, and then not have energy because I won't be my best. So what does that require? It means I have to have great health. Not like, I need to have six-pack abs all the time, but I need to be making healthy decisions in every area of my life. And so I say all that to say, like, that's my strong why. So what is the cost of that? Well, you can start working out. It's saying no to things. It's getting to bed on time. It's, this is the strategic planning coming in as well. It's your time frame orientation. This is going to be decades, not like a good year.
I look at it like the way I look at health is like a tax. Right. Your lack of health, it's going to tax your life. It's like I gave you a dollar, right? You get your life is 100 cents.
Yeah.
And all of the ways that you're unhealthy, maybe you only get 80 cents now. Maybe you only get 70 cents now. Yeah. If I only got a dollar, I don't want to get trimmed down to 70 cents. Like a dollar's not very much anyways.
Yeah.
That's the same perspective of our life. You don't have very much life. don't give up a little bit of the tiny piece that you already have. Get everything of this tiny little life that you have, and health is what's going to support that.
Yeah. Guys, I hope that if you're out there and you're the person that you're like, man, I need to hear this, that this has encouraged you to endure. Like Garrett quoted the scripture, consider it all joy. That really is. I mean, we talked about perspective last week. We're talking about endurance this week. We're doing this on purpose. So hope you all are encouraged. We will talk to you all again soon. Thank you very much for listening, guys. Remember to share, like, subscribe. If you think that this would be something that someone would enjoy, please send it to them. We appreciate it all. If you want to get in touch, you can follow us on Instagram at The Impossible Life. You'll find us on there. You can also email at impossiblelifepodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, if you want to get in touch and find out about Garrett's personal or business coaching, that's the way to do it. Thank you again for listening. Go out there, think better, and live the impossible. See you again soon. Long before ice baths were a thing, Garrett was doing them in the SEAL teams. Now we do them as part of our daily morning routine to make us better. We are very pleased to have partnered with Freedom Plunge. Freedom Plunge is on a mission to bring cold exposure to everyone. They believe that cold plunges should be affordable, easy to use, and represent the customer themselves. Cold plunges shouldn't cost a fortune, and these ones don't. Garrett and I both use our Freedom Cold Plunge every single day. It's customized. You can put whatever you want on them. For us, we have our Impossible Life logos. And here's the best part. Just for listening to this podcast, you can go to freedomplunge.com, use the discount code IMPOSSIBLE, and save $500 off any Freedom Plunge. These things are half the price of the ones that you see on the internet, plus you're going to save an additional $500 with code IMPOSSIBLE. Go to freedomplunge.com and get yourself one now. You will not regret it.